Hello, everybody. We're back with Spiritual Graffiti. It's just Pete today, no Ruby, and I'm joined with Daniel Rekshin. And Daniel is, well, he's got a long bio, but he's a author. He works with your dreams. He's an artist, hypnotist. He's into all kind of stuff. Would you consider yourself a magician too, or?
I think so. I think so. It's an identity I'm coming into.
And Daniel offers the DSETI project, which is kind of connecting to extraterrestrial intelligence through dream work. But I'll let you kind of start by telling us how you got into all this, like what brought you here, your Genesis story.
Sure. I mean, it's a long story. It sort of begins with childhood experiences of, I now call them exotic dream phenomena, but they're like sleep paralysis or lucid dreams or false awakenings, dream loops. And I had some really intense dreams as a kid. And I believe contact experience with spirit, with non-human intelligences and things like that, that really set me on a path of trying to figure out what was going on. And then I went through a few different phases with that and eventually started studying shamanism and psychology and spirituality. And then I got trained in hypnosis. And then it was another 5 years before I started really practicing with people. That was in 2020 when COVID really happened. It made me reconsider the direction of my life. And I decided, I better just use the education and training I have in the way that I'm really excited to do, which is really working with these really far out experiences like missing time or ET contact through supporting people with hypnosis. So that's kind of a synopsis of my,
Well, like just off of that, I have one question to start with. Do you feel like people experience sleep paralysis when they're beginning their awakening?
Yes, I think it's a sign for me that people. Basically, when people talk to me, they usually talk to me about their missing time experiences or the really strange psychic phenomena where entities are visiting or things are happening. And I ask people to share their history. And often, more often than not, people talk about how sleep paralysis was a big thing in their life. And even people who don't talk to me in terms of my hypnosis, but my other work, which is really looking into what's happening in ET contact, these people also talk about sleep paralysis experiences. So I kind of think it's common. It's a common experience when people start practicing lucid dreaming or out of body astral projection work.
No, I just say that because I know as a child I experienced sleep paralysis. And I remember, being terrified that it's going to happen was like the beginning stages. And then I started to, like, I associated the thought with like something kind of affecting me in a negative way. But then I realized, like, when I forced my will, I can get out of the space. And then once I conquered that, it kind of like it actually stopped happening. And then I noticed like other people that I've spoke to like things about as they started getting deeper, I'd tell them to like read books and stuff like that, and they felt like they were starting to open up. They would tell me they've had sleep paralysis experiences. So I just find I find it interesting that the connection, but where do I want to go with this? So I guess, is there any common themes with experiencers?
Regarding sleep paralysis, there are common themes in terms of the lived experience. There's oftentimes entities in the room, shadow people. They talk about like this. They often will use the word old hag or night hag, which comes from a specific kind of folklore. So there's entities that come and visit associated with sleep paralysis, and that's pretty common, as well as sometimes feelings of vibration. And that's also common to the astral projection or out of body experience.
Yeah. Now, in terms of like experiences with entities, is there common themes that people are experiencing, you know, that you've connected to? I know you've written a book about missing time. Do you feel like there's a common thread with them?
Yes. There seems to be. I mean, this is a really big question.
Yeah, I know.
There's common threads because we share a common culture oftentimes. So one of the ideas that I'm putting forward in the book is that these encounters are they're both dreams and real, both imagined and something else. So when we talk about encounters, like with a sleep paralysis experience, just as an example, a specific culture might have a specific idea about what those entities are. And so that might be, oh, it's the incubus or the succubus or this type of demon or that type of demon. But it varies between the culture. But what seems to be common among all those experiences is sleep paralysis, a sense of vibration, and a sense of presence in the room. So that tells me that some level of our culture or imagination shapes the way the entities appear to us. And so I use that insight and I look at the missing time experience or ET contact. And I see there's a wide variety of types of beings, like tall grays, short grays. They can be blue and orange and all sorts of stuff. Big eyes, small eyes, weird skin, flat skin, that sort of thing. But ultimately, what ends up happening is something kind of similar. There's a dreamlike state of consciousness people enter into. There's an entity that visits. There's a kind of a communication that happens. There's sometimes things like abduction phenomena or other things like that. Ultimately, I would say that the commonality is that regardless of what's happening, the experiencer somehow can make sense of that through their own spiritual practice, and that their own spiritual practice seems to impact ongoing interactions. And that's the thing I would put forward as a message, because these things are scary, that the experiencer really can work with their spiritual practice to shift those types of experiences.
Yeah. Do you feel like that a lot of the people that are having contact are going through spiritual awakenings as well? Or like, do the contacts affect them to like go through an awakening?
Yes. Yeah. This is one of the key points I find when so I like to look at skeptical literature, and I like to look at like people who believe and people who don't believe, and what do they say about contact experiences? And I particularly look to any survey of a large amount of people so all of those seem to say that contact experiences lead to spiritual awakening, spiritual understanding. They develop spiritual practice and they become more aware of their environment, more aware of other people, and more empathetic. So that's common across skeptics. People who are saying like abduction's crazy, like ET contact's crazy. Like people who would say this is, they literally just say it's schizotypal. They also go, but this seems like it's solving a problem for modern people who need spiritual contact, but don't have a way to do it. These kind of encounters come in.
Yeah. Like a forced vision quest or a forced coming of age experience. Yeah,
exactly.
But that kind of makes me almost think like it's really just an aspect of our subconscious that we're not facing. And then we have these experiences to kind of bring it to the surface. Like, this is a big question, obviously, but like, what's your view of like what ETs are?
It's a huge question. But this is the heart of the matter, because people are saying, they're angels. Oh, they're demons. Oh, they're fairies. Oh, they're this, that, the other thing. The thing that I think is the encounter is both real and dreamlike. So this is hard to categorize. There's something really happening, but also something is relating to the personal unconscious, the stuff you're not dealing with, basically. So what I imagine is happening now, and this is really an early idea. I'm still looking into it and thinking about it, so it's subject to change. But I sort of believe that these spirits or entities or visitors will come, and there's actually something out there in the world that is distinct from the experiencer. And I think of it like a ball of light or a figure of light. And I imagine that it can shift shapes and form different appearances, sort of like kind of like ectoplasm for spiritualists, or the kind of like if you've seen a wraith or like a projected double or something like that. Like that. So these things are visiting, and then they have a certain power to them that activates our unconscious mind, and they receive a lot of projections from us. So maybe a ball of light, sort of light orb UFO thing, comes and visits. And that's a common theme in UFO accounts, is there's some sort of light that happens. It's strange, it's weird, it feels intelligent, it moves. They show up. Then the human brain starts activating like the DMT or whatever, the dreaming mind. And then it needs to figure out what's going on. So it throws its ideas about what is possible in the supernatural world out and onto this ball of light thing. And this ball of light thing can then either just take that shape as a luminous figure or something like that, maybe a holographic projector type thing, or else it just allows for this kind of mind-to-mind shared dream experience to take a shape that's appropriate to the experiencer's unconscious at the time. So it's basically doing double duty. It's an actual thing visiting, but the impact we have in our lives is this sort of encounter of our own subconscious projections.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, like, you know, you made me think of a couple things, but like, you know, I used to sit for physical mediumship for about 5 years with a group, and the medium, the trans medium, was able to kind of transfigure his face with the use of like ectoplasm. But what I really was thinking about was even like trance states. I know you've been to Lilydale. I'm sure you have some experience with like trance or some sort of shamanic state, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So like, you know, shamanically, it's like your brain goes into theta state, which is like conducive for healing, meditation, experiences, right? And then if I've done like physical trance or trance mediumship, where you kind of, the goal is for your conscious mind to kind of step back,
yep,
and allow another consciousness to kind of work through you, or a spirit to work through you, whether it's for healing, whether it's for speaking and giving guidance. But I just find it interesting that like your brain wave state for trance and dreaming can be very similar. And it's also in those states, you know, your conscious or your ego mind kind of starts to take a back seat. And it's like, I don't know, I feel like there's something I got to get to that's there, that there's like a common thread. You know, it's like you have these dream states and you have these experiences, and you're only allowed to really have these experiences because your ego isn't getting in the way. And it's just like, I feel like they're almost like the same thing in a way.
Yes. I have that same sort of feeling too. One of the big key points in my research was reading a paper about defining dreams. It was made in the 2000s, and it brought like six dream scientists together, and they were like, how do we define dreams? And they couldn't figure out exactly how to define them. They couldn't even define them to nighttime experiences. So because they kept seeing things like trance or like these sort of daydream states. And so that made me realize that we're going in and out of dream states all throughout our life. And that's sort of just what's happening, into trance or into these spirit connections. And there is a sort of relationship with ego. I'm not sure exactly what it is. When I did my, I have had a missing time encounter. It was like I was driving down the road with my brother, and we were all of a sudden in this new space. It was very strange in terms of our state of consciousness. And we get out of this new space, this new place. There's no connection from where we were to the moment where we came to, basically. And anyways, this was in like 2003. And then about a year or two ago, I had my own regression experience on that. And the insight that came forward, and one of the strong ones, was that the kind of perspective people have in these experiences that are very egoic, this categorical thinking, is me versus outside, self, other, kind of real, false, that is a sort of limitation to experiencing or understanding the nature of these experiences.
Yeah. Well, what else I wanted to get to kind of with the trance state is, you know, for a while, when I first started practicing trance, because my mentor was a trance medium, and it was hard for me to like surrender, right?
Yeah.
And then I went to this like workshop with this trance medium, and I was going deeper. I could feel myself going deeper and deeper and deeper, and he kind of helped me because, you know, he was doing it for 30 years or so. And the thing that I found interesting was when I was really able to get deep and like feel my consciousness kind of like step back, it felt very similar to an ego death experience I had.
Mm.
And it was like I pierced through this veil where I had this like, you know, anybody who had ego death experiences, you know, when it first happens, it's very shocking, you know, like that's why I think like someone like Kali is depicted as like a goddess of like destroying the self, because it's like, it's a real scary thing, because you're in a sense, you feel like you don't exist anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So, but when I went into this deep trance state, I noticed that like when I finally got through that veil where like they were able to talk through me and I got to this deep state, it's like I felt that like death of self, but it felt like I was almost like, it was almost like I was in the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
While they were working, you know? But what it makes me think is that like, you know, dreaming feels like the same thing to me. It's like you're in that spiritual realm. And then I think like, you know, in an essence, we're always in the spiritual realm.
Mm.
You know, and it's like we're, I think, I just think there's something, I'm not getting to the bottom of it yet, but I feel like there's something I'm digging into that like should be revealed. Like I could feel like there's like this like layer of like moving into that space more and more. I mean, I personally feel like we're kind of evolving to more of like a unity consciousness way of being, like, or at least like the awareness of it.
Yeah.
And maybe it's like bringing more, I mean, you know, everybody says this is a dream, so maybe it's bringing more of that dreamlike sensation into your everyday life, or like wake, almost like wake dreaming, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the same stuff and sort of like trying to wrap my mind around it too. I look to these things. And even in my work with dreams and stuff like that, I go, okay, this feels like life is a dream. And thinking about unity consciousness, it's like dreams give us a direct experience of unity consciousness, sort of like when we wake up from them, or if we're lucid inside of them and can express our intent, and then they respond to us, that sort of thing. But like when we wake up from them, it's sort of like easy to go, oh, a lot of that or most of that was just me. And so it's a really strong experience of having like nightmares for me are similar to that, because there's like scary things that I don't think are part of me. They're not part of my ego, right? They're down in the subconscious because I've repressed them, but they're now in my experience because of the nightmare. Then I wake up and I go, oh, that must have somehow been me. And I think with unity consciousness, we'll have that kind of realization, or we're sort of trying to wake up to that notion. And I'm super curious what that will be like in this world, like in the waking world and things like that. And I do see people are moving towards that notion more and more.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, you know, I always, mediumship is what I've done. So I always kind of compare everything to that and how I understand it, because I feel like connecting to spirit is like a very, you know, people don't realize, like, when you do start going through like a spiritual awakening and, you know, bad things are happening to you.
Yeah.
And I'm using the word bad, but it's really like what's happening is like you're raising your vibration from working with the spiritual realm, and the things that are like dormant within you are coming up.
Yep.
You know, and everybody, like, to me, the dark night of the soul, as I've always said, is really just kind of like an apex of like you kind of raising your vibration, which in turn is making you manifest faster. And then you're also simultaneously bringing up trauma.
Yeah.
So it's like you kind of have this apex moment of like shit hitting the fan, and it's like, why is this happening to me? But really, you're healing.
Yep.
You know? So like I think a lot of this is really just like us working through our stuff, and it manifests in different forms, whether it's a dream or ET abduction. Like, I think it's just like a manifestation of all that you're kind of working through and bringing up.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In dream work or dream work groups, when new people sort of start, there's like a wisdom among people who do dream work practice or lead those groups. It's basically an awareness that when new people come in and start paying attention to their dreams, their dreams finally go, oh, thank God, we can tell you all this stuff that you've been repressing. And it gets like gnarly or for a while. And then you work through it. And then there's layers forever and ever. Like we're always circling around or spiraling around some of these things. I'm super curious, Pete, about your experience with transmediumship. We were talking about, we're aiming towards this insight or realization, and you were talking about stepping away and having ego death and then something else coming in. And I can't help but think that thing that's coming in those trance experiences, your memories of it, might be relevant to our conversation. What happened there?
Well, I've had experiences with Padre Pio. He was a healing saint from Italy.
Okay.
And what's significant with him is, I mean, I could go down a rabbit hole with this. I mean, so I'll start with, I have a friend I used to sit with in my trans mediumship circle, was trying to get me to go. He goes and does like a form of DMT with a shaman.
Yeah.
Right. And I was always scared of it because I did mushrooms when I was younger in a ritual way, and it like blew me away for like 2 years. Like, yeah. It took me like an honest 2 years to get over. So I was always terrified of psychedelics, to be honest.
Yeah.
And he was trying to get me to do psychedelics. And I was like, I don't know. I'm terrified, whatever. So one day, this is all a big circle with Padre Pio. So one day I am meditating in my house and I'm sitting on the couch and I see this lady in my head and she's not past. She came to me in like an energetic form.
Hmm.
And she told me, I have to tell my friend, John, the gentleman who was trying to get me to do psychedelics. She says, you have to tell your friend, John, that, you need to come see me and I'll be around soon.
Hmm.
And I saw a picture of her face and everything. So I get done and I text my friend, John, and he sends me a picture and he says, he said, is this who you saw? And I said, yes. And he's like, oh, that's the woman who runs the medicine circle.
Wow.
She's a shaman. And I was like, okay. And he's like, and there's a group in 2 weeks. And I was like, I still like, even that sign where most people would be like, all right. Yeah. Like I was still like scared. So, I'm driving in my car thinking about it. And, I say out loud, well, let me tell another side story. Sorry. It's a big circle. But, when I was a kid, I had a friend, a family friend. He was an older gentleman, Italian, which is Padre Pio. He was, he died of cancer and he gave me a Padre Pio coin. So back in the day, like Padre Pio, he was famous for, he actually had, stigmata.
Mm.
And he was like a priest in Italy and he would go around and he would heal people, but he had like, you know, all these like spiritual occurrences and like old school Italians would give his coin to people for like a blessing. It was like a token of good luck or something like that. So when this gentleman passed, he left me the coin.
Yep.
And I lost it. So back to the day I was driving in the car, I said to the universe, if I'm supposed to go, give me a clear sign. And my wife texted me like 2 minutes later that she found this Padre Pio coin out of nowhere. Just text me randomly. She was like, oh, I was cleaning something out and I found this coin. Is this yours? And I was like, yeah. So I took that as a sign and I went. And, you know, I had a very intense experience. I mean, the biggest thing I got out of it was that the understanding of deja vu.
Hmm.
So my thought was, so basically I met this form of God and he kind of explained to me that everything we do is just purely for experience. And that's why we're here. There's no real good or bad. There's no, you know, like you come here and you experience things. That's what it's about. And after that, I got this download of like what deja vu is, because I always had deja vu growing up. So I was obsessed with it. So he told me that basically like when you die or you go into the spiritual realm, you're with God. So when you're with God, you're outside of time. Therefore, you've already experienced this moment. And that always stuck with me. Because it just like shows the bigger picture, I guess. You know, like it kind of made me understand the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And that's why I kind of like question. I feel like it's almost the root of questioning everything comes from that statement, kind of. Because it's like, even like connecting to deceased loved ones, which I'm a medium and I connect to them.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if we're all one in essence, like who am I really connecting to? Myself?
That's a really good question. I've asked similar questions when I've contemplated the missing time, the alien abduction missing time experience, where I go, hang on a second, these beings, they apparently are telepathic and they can travel through time, which means they've probably already experienced this or have a different perspective of this. Who is this actually who's performing these actions? And what does it mean to do like a missing time hypnotic regression to try to recover those memories? Isn't that actually something more like spirit communication? So I had those questions with the missing time experience myself. I'm curious with the, like, in terms of the practical application that you have in your mediumship practice, I mean, the messages I assume come through and are meaningful in the time for the people you work with. So how do you, like, how do you wrap your mind around that?
I always go in like waves, because even like, it was interesting. You do sessions, and we actually did a session together, and it was awesome. I really liked it, really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
But something that was really interesting to me, right, is there was a moment where I always connected to owls growing up, and I still connect to owls, and an owl energy kind of stepped forward. It was also, I guess, connected to Baphomet. Yeah. But what was interesting is, like, really, I felt the owl like it was a spirit, like it was a form of some sort of deity, whatever. But I got the awareness that it really is like an aspect of myself. Yeah. So it, like, really questioned everything, because I felt it like it was a spirit separate from me. But then as we kind of worked with the energy, it came down to the fact that it was actually like my own like inner critic and my own like self-judgment.
Yeah.
You know, which kind of threw me for a loop. Cause then I think like, see, like I'm trying to bring it all together, because like with the trance stuff, how we spoke already about like how it felt like, you know, as you get to those deeper levels, or it doesn't have to be trance, as your brain gets to these theta delta states where it's like slowed down, it's like it's almost like your awareness steps back and you have like a more grand awareness.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're in that space where you have this like grand awareness, and then like there's the truth that at essence, we're all one. It's yeah. Like, I feel like there's something there, like that I'm feeling like the understanding starting to come through, but it's almost like I'm moving toward, it's like we're on the brink of an awareness that we're all one. It's yeah. Like back to that unity consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, which I guess is terrifying too, because, you know, it kind of gets rid of the ego.
Yeah. I mean, I often think about that sort of thing. One of the things I studied in the past, and this is sort of kind of, we haven't talked about it at all, but it's the meditation practice and contemplative arts. So I spent a long time sort of meditating and doing contemplative arts, which is like flower arrangement or calligraphy in this really way of meditation. And it's from the Shambhala Buddhist tradition, where the Lama, excuse me, that's the train coming and you might be hearing that.
It's all good.
Yeah. So the Lama Trungpa Rinpoche would do photographs, and he would do calligraphies, and he would make these beautiful art sculptures. And he talked about it in terms of like a practice of meditation and enlightenment. And the reason why I'm talking about that is because if we imagine these like Buddha type people are enlightened, they're not if they do art, right? Like I imagined at the time this Trungpa Rinpoche was highly enlightened or something like that. And I still think there's a lot of enlightenment in his experience and in all of that. But he would just make art from these states of mindfulness, complete mindfulness. And there is a sort of creativity or something that wants to express itself even from this state of egolessness or something like that. And the reason why I'm thinking about this is like thinking about all the different types of encounters people can have. Like they can encounter spirit guides and aliens and past lives and animal totems. And they're all these different aspects that the spirit world is reminding us that we're all one, we're all God. But there's something really different in the experience of encountering like owls versus like physical mediumship versus alien abduction. There's something really, really different, even though they're all pointing to the same sort of thing, perhaps. And I'm not sure if that helps, but
it makes me think of like, so like, it's like, where do these things, anything comes from? Like, for example, I was thinking about the other day, like, where does like the come from? Right. For me, after like thinking about it, I thought, well, like our body, you know, like who's our first authority? Our body, like death, you know, like your fear of death.
Yeah.
Like what rule, like what tells you what to do? Like if you didn't have anybody, it's your body, how you feel, how you see, hear, you know, whatever. So it's like, there's always like the microcosm, macrocosm.
Yeah.
You know, so like even like being creative, like being an artist, it's like you come into this world as Daniel, I came as Pete, like I am my, you know, it's like version of God, or if that's what you want to call it, or like, you know, this is how I manifest, right? So then when you create something, it's like a microcosm of that. It's like your art is a microcosm of you, you know? So I feel like it's like, whenever you're playing with that, you know, I think it's almost like a pattern of energy, you know, because I think that's like some people, I feel like my understanding of magic is like seeing the pattern on a big scale and bringing it through on a little scale, you know, or working with energy, like working with planetary energy, like, how does it manifest on a planetary scale? And then like, how can you bring that through a ritual on a small scale to affect your life?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, I feel like it's kind of the same line of like thinking.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's making me aware of a sense of like uniqueness as well. I mean, I was appreciating you talking about the body as an authority. And I know from talking with you, right, the spirits talk through your body a lot. That's that kind of experience. And that's, I think, I don't know if that kind of awareness, that body is authority, would come out of someone who has a different mode of perception, like through different vehicles. And that, in a sense, is like we are all everything, right? But also we're inhabiting these patterns of energy that are uniquely us, at the same time as exploring ego death and in these other different realms. So there is like a lot of complexity there and appreciation for individuality.
Yeah, well, I think like I try to like look at things that people say is like almost guaranteed or like, and say like, why, you know, like, why is it this way? You know, like even like, I've been thinking about like Jesus a lot. Right. And like, you know, kind of throwing around the thought of like almost being like a, this is going to sound bad for anybody who's a real Jesus follower, but like, I've had my own experiences with Jesus and they've always been positive.
Yeah.
But I think like the egregore of Jesus is like, can be parasitic. Well, I was thinking about like, we were talking about unity consciousness, like, and if we're evolving to like the fourth dimension, let's say, I mean, I don't like using those terms, but that's what I call it, fourth dimension. Like we're in the third dimension and then we see two dimensions, like we're duality, you know? So like now if we're moving to the fourth dimension, you know, maybe we'll see this, that, and everything.
Yep.
You know, so, but then like, if we're moving towards that, right, does that two-dimensional way of thinking become like almost negative or limiting, you know? Because I just noticed like something that interests me is like people who kind of like go back to Jesus.
Yeah.
And like turn back. Like, why does that happen?
Yeah.
You know, it just, I find it interesting. Like, there's people I know in the spiritual new age type stuff who kind of have turned back to like born again and stuff like that. And I'm not judging who they've become or what they believe, but I'm just, if I find it interesting that like, for me, like I view mediumship as like a God given ability. Like everybody has it, you know, we may express it differently or we might experience it differently, but there's always that connection. So if it's within me, like how can I judge it as being evil or negative? You know, it's like, it's the same as like, to me, mediumship is the same as being creative.
Yep.
You know, like if you're connecting to like your creative aspect, imagination, and bringing through a painting.
Yeah.
I'm just connecting to the imagination where it's more like spirit led, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I've had experiences with both mediumship and painting, and I feel it's the same. I feel it's very, very similar activities and very, very essentially human. So,
yeah. I mean, what do you think about, what's your thoughts on connecting to spirit and, just in general, like what's your, I know you spent time in Lilydale too, right?
I did. Yeah. That was through, this has been my path basically, is like, at that point, I didn't know where I was going or what I was doing in my life. And I was invited to house sit there. And I said, yeah, sure. I'll house sit. So I spent a summer in Lilydale. I went to classes and I went to the church things all the time, just because it's such a beautiful opportunity. And I thought, you know, I better learn what the universe wants me to learn, because I'm here for a reason. And that's been my kind of experience in general, is a sense of both sort of like accidental. It's like, I don't know why I'm here, but I'm finding myself being here and doing this thing. And I had those experiences across dreams there was like one lady in my life that was really significant for me. Like right after I graduated college, I went to rural Georgia. I managed a nonprofit art gallery in a very small town. And there was one lady who was not like a fundamental Christian. She was into metaphysics, and she knew I was into philosophy and metaphysics, so thought there would be a great connection. And she and I would like eat popcorn and watch, I think it was the Conscious Awakening Network or Conscious Media Network. There was one lady there that was interviewing all of these people, and it just blew my mind just what was available. I didn't know if I was going to believe it or not, the stuff that they said, but someone she interviewed, his name was Tom Campbell. He talks a lot about out of body experience. He said, you know, if you don't believe what I'm saying, just try it. Just try it.
Yeah.
And so I did try it, and wow, that was that. I mean, that sent me on a path of going, wow, there's a lot more. And that's been my kind of path of encountering spirit. I've had a sort of deep, deep yearning for understanding and spirit and kind of connecting back, going like, there's something more than what the world is telling me there is. It's like when I looked up at the stars at night, I felt that kind of feeling. And that's kind of, it's like a formless yearning that somehow I know is connected to like these accidental connections that have really shaped my life. Lilydale was one of those where I learned how people connect with spirit in their ways. And I saw how that was happening. I was able to, it felt really great to be in a community of people who have those practices. And it's like, it's a different world where everyone believes that you can communicate with spirits, and that seems natural. And that really was opening up for, that helped me open up to my own kind of experience. It gave me courage to kind of play around and make mistakes and then go and like practicing with people too. That was really helpful. So I go, I'm seeing this, I'm feeling this. And they go, oh my God, that's actually my grandma or whatever. Go, oh, okay. I thought I was just imagining it, but it seems relevant to you. And then I had an experience like that where I realized, oh, the imagination and these sort of subtle prompts in my imagination and intuition, those are actually spirit talking to me. It's not going to like overwhelm my consciousness. I'm not going to have ego death in the moment. Like, it's not going to be like heavenly choirs generally. It's just sort of these quiet, still voices. And I go, oh, okay, I can start paying attention more. And once I had that moment of connecting, oh, this is spirit talking to me, and then going, oh, maybe I should pay attention to it and take action in the way that it's guiding me. Of course, like a reasonable action. But once I started doing that, I started knowing or observing more that connection. I started learning the language spirit was speaking to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like one of my spiels, I guess, is like, you know, I still work a day job. I'm a blue collar guy, and I always attract people kind of secretly seeking these experiences, people you wouldn't think. And I always kind of try to demystify, like, you know, you see the movies and culture, like people expect this like grand experience. Yep. And it's much more like just being more aware of like a voice in your head that we all hear anyway, you know? I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I feel like if everybody kind of becomes aware of just that alone, you know, the world would change in a second.
Yeah.
Or at least I feel like that. I don't know. Getting back to dreams, I know you have the DSETI program project. Do you feel like there's ways for people to bring on these experiences?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Especially with dreams. Dreams are really easy, or more easy to work with than the sort of bigger ET contact experiences. One of the bits of research that the DSETI idea is based on, and DSETI stands for the Dream Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, or the Dream Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence. But it's really based around the, like, SETI is we're using radio telescopes to look for signals of extraterrestrials. And the idea here is to use dreams instead. Basically, the notion is that we are somewhat like telepathic dreamers. We do have evidence or indications that we can be telepathic dreamers. We can share dream experiences, and that we can do that. I mean, in terms of actual practicality, the like sharing a dream between people, you can practice that. You might practice that with your wife or something like that and have good luck with that. I've shared dreams maybe a handful of times in my life. And it's relatively rare for me between humans. I've had people say I've been in their dreams, and that happened twice in the last 2 weeks. Actually.
I want to touch in on that.
Okay.
Because people say that to me all the time. And I, like, people I teach and do stuff like that, like, oh, you should, like, what do you think that is? It's like, is it just their version of me, or is it like an energetic like connection?
I think it can be a wide variety of experiences. I know that some dream people, some dream teachers can actually dream themselves into other people's dreams and get information or whatever. I'm not one of those people.
Really?
Yeah. Robert Wagner, he talks about lucid dreaming. I was just floored when he said that. I met him at a dream conference, and I was just like, what are you talking? Oh my God, wow. And it's actually, I mean, it's not unethical or whatever. They usually have like agreements and things like that, or this like teacher-student relationship. The same thing happens with Tibetans. They reference that kind of capacity. So that's on one side of it. On the other side of it, it's just like, oh, people dream about friends and family members. So there's a huge range of possibilities. So these people who say I've been in their dreams, right, has happened recently. It's like maybe they're thinking about me because we've been correspondents. Maybe some part of me did actually have encounters like that with them. I did a podcast that I think connected us, which was the Higher Side Chats. Greg was like, let's do a dream telepathy, like that kind of experiment. Didn't work at all for him and me. But actually, one of my clients, who's a very skilled kind of shared dreaming person, had the dream. It was like nuts. I was like, oh my God, this actually worked. But it worked for the wrong person. And so it made me go, okay, so something actually is, I was like, God, I need to just get better at this because I know this is going to keep coming up or whatever. Yeah. So something actually is really happening there, I feel like, in some of the cases. And we just need to, I mean, I think as a culture, we need to talk a lot more about dreams, and then we'll start making those connections, because it feels really silly to go, I had a dream about you. And oftentimes, it is meaningful if you dream about a person and are telling them. And so you want to believe there's a deeper reality or a deeper connection there. And I would say that there is. I think we're really connected with other people in our dream world. I don't have really good science behind saying that, except for these telepathy studies. And they did a bunch of telepathy studies. But those telepathy studies are, can we send an image from one person that's awake to a person who's dreaming? And that the level of communication is never like a one-to-one. It would be like if you're trying to send an image of an Apple or something like that, you might get an Apple computer or you might get a round red thing. And those would be considered hits, meaning they're statistically, it's like, wow, that's kind of rare that it's like some of those qualities of that image were sent over, but it's kind of rare to get like an Apple kind of going across telepathy in that way.
Yeah, that terrifies me because I was reading an article about like Google trying to like place ads in your dreams through different like practices. And I was just like, oh, that's all we need. It's McDonald's in my head trying to sell me a cheeseburger.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think actually, I mean, so this is sort of like getting back to the DSETI idea. And this is a thing I keep observing in like all history. Like I'm looking to see in the past how people have talked about dreams and things like that. And we get sometimes messages from the world or entities. Like there's in every single religious culture and spiritual tradition, there is a class of entities that comes and visits people in their dreams. Like these are like angels or bodhisattvas or something like that. And they have huge, huge teachings that come through, like some entire texts have come through just dreams. And so it's not, I don't ever imagine, I would like to believe the corporations will never be able to do something like that. And it really takes someone with spiritual power and authority to do that, to step into someone else's dreams, to teach them. I primarily believe that that actually is the case. Like your dreaming mind, your spirit, and your spirit guides really can kind of control that situation for you. That's what
Well, like if you think about it, like our current reality, right? It's like, you know, you, me, maybe people who are kind of trying to be more self-aware, right? Like, what do you start doing when you start becoming self-aware? You kind of look at everything you're kind of consuming, like your food, your water, you know, like your mind, your emotions. So it's like, yeah, maybe like me and you who may have our own practices can protect ourselves because, hey, we know McDonald's is bad for us, right? But like the average person who kind of is just trying to survive and isn't kind of having that awareness or like protecting themselves, maybe they're more susceptible. I don't know. It's just a thought.
Yeah. I mean, You know, honestly, this is not a thought I've ever thought before. And thank you for it's I'm connecting this to the like alien abduction research in the 1990s did something similar where there was a group of people who did a study on alien abduction, and they used that study to claim that 3% or something, or like 3.7 million Americans are abducted by aliens. But the only evidence they had was a survey of 6,000 people, and they asked questions. They said, do you dream of UFOs? Have you seen, it's basically this is sleep paralysis plus a little alien themes. Like, have you seen a figure in your bedroom? Have you been paralyzed at night? Have you felt like feelings of flying? And so they really, and these people, they spent, I don't know, like $250,000 at the time to send, to do this work and to send out this study to 100,000 mental health practitioners, warning them if their clients had symptoms, this list of symptoms, then they were likely abductees. And really? It, oh God, it is nuts. I swear to God, I've read this 100 times because I thought this is insane. And I've asked people who know whether or not they've done this. And they go, yeah, I think they actually did this in the 90s. So, I mean, it is nuts because so now we have like 100,000 mental health practitioners being warned by, it was like a former head of Harvard Psychiatry and funded by Robert Bigelow and the Prince of Liechtenstein. And these mental health practitioners are going like, oh, so now you have, if their clients are presenting symptoms of sleep paralysis, they go, you might be an abductee. And at that moment, from that moment on, that relationship, they're implanting these ideas into their patients that they could be abductees. And that this is might actually be some of my like research I'm doing for the PhD is figuring out how this happened, what is the implication of this? Because it seems as if they've implanted the idea of alien abduction into natural dream phenomena like sleep paralysis. And sort of have been controlling it in that way. I don't actually know why, but that's the sort of feeling I get from all of that research. And so, you know, it may actually be something like McDonald's kind of controlling our dreams, that this is kind of maybe already happened with that alien abduction narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, just to kind of tie this into my sometimes ridiculous way of thinking, I have 3 kids, 8, 6, and 3. And, you know, obviously I watch a lot of kids movies, right? And I'm always like, you know, I always try to look at things deeply or like see if I catch something that maybe like isn't intended for people to see or whatever. And I've noticed my wife too, because I pointed out to her now, so now she looks too. But in a lot of kids' movies, there's always like weird alien references or alien Easter eggs in the background.
Yep.
And it just makes me think, like, subconsciously, are they programming us? Like, are they creating this form of God within us, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's to, you know, change religion or like create some sort of new religion, or, you know, it's like, I remember when I was in college and it always stuck with me because at the time I didn't really understand what they were doing, but it was basically a paper, I think written by Harp about myth building. And like creating myths, you know, and it's like, why would they want that? And now, like, I think about it now and I understand that, like, if you, you know, leave these subtle hints and kind of let the imagination of humanity kind of do its job over time, it just becomes real.
Yep.
You know, so then it's like, if I feel that in the background, then it just kind of makes me question my whole experience.
Yes. Yeah. I have that same sense of questioning. The document I talked about, this sense of programming, this is the one bit of programming I really encountered it in my research. I was like, what is going on here? I read through the document a few times and I said, this feels like cultural programming. Because after they introduced the topic of alien abduction, they had the survey organization that like runs polls to go like, it typically would like ask questions like, do you like Coca-Cola or Pepsi? Right. And they would figure out those answers. Do you like McDonald's or Burger King? But in this case, they were like, have you seen a ghost? And so they have all this demographic information about people and they sort of analyzed it according to the report. And they said, abductees, these 3.7 million people in America, they seem to be influential Americans. They're trendsetters. They make more money. And the way that the document was written just made me feel like, oh my God, they actually are just programming these mental health professionals to perpetuate this myth of alien abduction for some purpose that I have no idea what that is. But it does feel like the same sort of, I watch some kids movies and stuff like that with my kids. And I'm like, what is this programming happening with these like subtle, like the alien characters you mentioned and things like that.
Yeah. Or even like, I could think of ones off the top of my head because they always stuck with me. There was like, I think it was like Sing, you know, the movie Sing. I think it was Sing One. There's like UFO pictures in like the background in like the kids' rooms and stuff like that. And it's just like, is it a weird coincidence that it like repeats like that? Or is there like actual, you know, influence? And then, you know, I talked about earlier having a session with you and I felt like I had this experience where I connected to this past life of me being like this like Roman soldier and being abducted. And the message that came through was that kind of like they, even the aliens are kind of influencing us, you know, selectively influencing certain people and certain energies to kind of affect a gradual shift collectively.
Yeah.
So it's kind of along the same lines. I mean, like, what do you feel like the purpose of all this is? Like, all the people that you've kind of connected to in terms of having experiences, like, what do you feel like the theme is?
Yeah, I think there's at least two levels of themes. One is the personal theme, like, why that's meaningful to you, why these encounters in... it's basically at that level, it's up to the individual experiencer to determine the theme. And I say that there's a choice that every experiencer has, and it's to make those experiences personally meaningful and beneficial to the life, or to repress them, or to do something else. So that's the theme I say is like, if you as an experiencer have a choice to make these experiences meaningful, and to in any life experience, you can either choose to continue to be a victim of your own circumstances, or to take some level of responsibility and say, I'm actually on this journey. I'm going to this way. I want to be of benefit to my family, to my community. And that's the orientation that you have a choice around. So I feel like that with all of these alien encounters and things like that, is I would choose that they are spiritually awakening for people and of benefit to their communities, according to the principle of non-harm. That's my choice in that. Now there's something else happening actually in terms of why these encounters are unfolding. And it's hard to figure out because like I said, I imagine there's something really distinct from the individual kind of approaching the individual in these encounters. And there's something that the individual brings to these encounters. So how to separate that is hard. In general, it feels as if it is a kind of evolutionary guidance in some way. I look to the work of Dolores Cannon, who does the quantum healing hypnosis technique, QHHT. And she really described the sense of these aliens as custodians. She wrote the book Custodians, suggesting that they are some way like angels guiding the evolution of humanity. And that's what I would like to believe. There are some other, you know, kind of nefarious types of experience or malicious, according to the lore out there. I haven't really met anyone that is completely a victim to those. So I'm not sure how much those are just narratives out in the world or how much of that is me avoiding that kind of experience, like you know, angels and demons type thing. I would prefer to talk to angels than demons in my life and research and practice anyways. So,
Well, I mean, even back to like kind of everything we've been talking about, the other thing is like, I feel like maybe it's really just like our collective unconscious or our collective subconscious, like being brought out on an individual level, and like you're interacting with like the collective unconscious or the collective subconscious, and it's kind of reflecting back whoever you are.
Yep.
You know, and it's just an interaction with that. And if like you think of it in terms of like an evolution, back to how I was talking about like how mediumship can bring up, you know, through or working spiritually can bring up your vibration, which kind of tends to bring up any like trapped trauma or, you know, trapped negative emotions or negative feelings. You know, the abduction or the alien experience could just be a form of that on a more grand scale.
Yeah. I would intuitively agree with you on that. I say intuitively because I can't think of any like research or whatever. I like to speak from a couple perspectives because I'm like I'm a professional hypnotist and then I'm also an experiencer. I'm agreeing with you at a personal level. I go, yeah, that makes sense to me. So
yeah, well, because I also think like if. Like in a sense, if like alien experiences or abduction experiences are almost like, I use this word loosely, but like boogeyman experience, you know, like does that mean necessarily that maybe we've come from aliens? Yeah. You know, like is that, well, because like it feels like sometimes like a lot of the experiences feel like a form of God to me.
Yeah.
And like, what is really God in the classical traditional sense? It's like our parents, you know, it's who brought us into this world. So it's like that, like the more aware we become more aware of what God is.
Yeah.
And it manifests differently, as you know, like back in the day, you know, they would say, oh, there was chariots in the sky.
Yep.
And it's like that was their understanding.
Yeah.
You know, now maybe we're moving into like a more awareness of like a general infinite intelligence, and aliens are like what our mind comes up with.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotta have something to do with where we see ourselves in the world and the stories we tell ourselves, like you were saying with chariots and the fire, like God's here. We have this sort of awareness that this is more or less like there's a center of the universe type experience, right? Like where the earth is the center of the universe in the past. And now it's less so. So there's like things moving because of that. I think in part too, one of the, you asked me earlier, and I just wanted to circle back to that, is this, like you said, would you consider yourself a magician? And I was like, maybe. And you're talking about the purpose of these alien abduction experiences, this sense of perhaps open canvas or like co-creation, or maybe this is us, that kind of intuition made me shift into the kind of magical practices as opposed to just mystical experience. So I thought, you know, there may be an opportunity to enact personal will in these experiences. And the will I would enact is for that these experiences unfold according to the principle of non-harm for the benefit of all, for the highest good. And some of the nefarious things that are happening in, I don't know, alien talk and stuff like that, I thought, you know, maybe those could be impacted. Maybe things could be made better or more clear by choosing to enact my will in this space. So I wanted to just bring that up because one of the fundamental messages I have is that we are not powerless victims in the alien encounter, no matter what. And anyone that says different, I would invite to expand their research or expand their experience. And I'd be happy if anyone is like listening to this and thinks different, and like, please just send me an email or something and we can talk about it. But that's really the message I have is that we're not powerless victims, and that we may actually, even though we're humans and don't understand a lot of stuff, we may actually have that capacity to enact our will. And I want to see how that unfolds. That's kind of an experiment I'm in personally.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that about like negative entities too. It's like, it always made me think, like when people talk about like lizard people, you know, which is a common theme with like conspiracy or whatever. It's like, my thought has always been like, if we are always evolving, which I think we are, like, I think we're always kind of making the, as bad as this might seem to some people right now, I feel like the world is always getting better.
Yeah.
It may like ebb and flow, obviously, but as a whole, I feel like we're getting better. So like if a civilization is much more advanced than us, I wouldn't think they would be like nefarious or negative.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually wanted to bring up something else too that I thought of. I don't remember who was giving the talk, but it was interesting. I listened to this talk about, the talk was something along the lines of like, aliens aren't what you think they are, right?
Okay.
And basically, this gentleman believed through, I believe, DMT experiences, right? He was saying that, like, if you look at humanity, and this is just his belief, it's just a theory, you know, within the next, say, 500 years, we will probably like transcend our physical bodies if we want to, you know, in terms of like whether that's like transferring your consciousness or, you know, not really being able to die due to like medical advances and stuff like that. So he was saying like, there's probably like a 500 to 1,000 year window where like we're not physical beings in the classical sense.
Yeah.
So like aliens, you know, transcend physical being, and then like who knows which way they evolve towards. So like we probably couldn't even see them maybe if we wanted to. And his belief was actually that they go smaller and go subatomical.
Huh.
And, but it was interesting. It made me think of like, you know, behind every blade of grass, there's an angel.
Yeah.
So like, and then like I started to, I mean, this is kind of a trippier thought, but I thought like they're on such a small scale that maybe they're like, within our body.
Yep. Yeah.
And then like if they're within our body, like they're causing these dreams, you know, or like they're causing you to have these experiences, and they're the things that actually are our life force.
Hmm.
I know that's a little out there, but I was just thinking like, you know, maybe aliens are all around us, but they're just in a different level of understanding, like something we can't even comprehend. Because if something is, say, a million years more advanced than us, Like, look at the last 100 years.
Yep.
Like, we wouldn't, you know, maybe they're in some way evolving us through dreams, and that's how they, you know, like, I just think it's like such a fractal, like, you know, microcosm, macrocosm. It's like just paradoxical, you know?
Yes.
I don't know where I was going with that, but I just thought of it and shared it. Yeah, so I don't know. What else do I want to talk about? Yeah. Now I'm like lost in thought with that, just like spinning it around my head. But is there anything else you want to talk about or touch in on?
Oh, I did want to just close the line of thinking around D-SETI and if there's something people can do around that. Oh,
yeah, for sure.
And really the thing I would say is dreams do respond to intention. So this is a practice called dream incubation where you can say, hey, I want to have a dream about, and a lot of people will say, I want to have a solution to a problem I'm working on. I want to have a lucid dream experiment or experience. I want to gain insight about something. And oftentimes the dreams will respond. So there's a lot of good science behind that practice of dream incubation. There's also a thing where people can become lucid, meaning they become aware of the fact they're dreaming, and they can do that through practices. And when they're then in the lucid dream experience, they can remember their intention. And so people can remember like intentions to do anything in lucid dreams. Sometimes they say, I want to fly tonight in a dream. I want to meet an angel. And then one of the things that was really interesting to me is that this was wild to me because I looked at the rates of how many times people can remember and accomplish their intentions for lucid dreaming. It's about 50% of the time that people become lucid, they remember their intent and accomplish it. And then there was this other study where dream researchers had people go into a lucid dream and have the intention to meet an alien or see a UFO or something like that. 74% of those people accomplish their goals, which is not the same kind of comparison between 50% remembering their intention and accomplishing it versus 74% throughout the study. But that just showed me that anyone who really tries to have a lucid dream with aliens likely will or could. And then when I combine that with the knowledge that there is something like dream telepathy, I go, huh, something actually really could be happening here. So if anyone's really interested in that, they can have, they can incubate a dream, kind of opening up and saying, hey, I would like to have a dream regarding ET contact. Or they can do lucid dream practices and remember an intent to have that. I would say, and I would invite anyone who opens up to ET contact to do so in a way that, in the same way that they might open up to the spirit world, knowing that there's angels and demons and ghosts and all sort of stuff in the spirit world. So too, there's a wide variety of different types of entities we could encounter. Some are more obviously reflections of ourselves than others and more obviously reflections of God than others. And so setting the intention for highest good, according to the principle of non-harm, is really beneficial in that kind of exploration. Yeah.
Now, you recommend, I mean, just pure intention? Like, you feel like that's the best medicine to kind of interact?
I do, through dreams. The path of dreaming, I would say, is like, okay, start working with your dreams. If you want to make contact in your dreams, you first have to start remembering your dreams. You first have to start practicing with your intention. Remembering your dreams is pretty easy. It's establishing a habit of making notes about your dream experiences is the best way to start remembering your dreams. In addition to saying, before you go to bed, I really want to remember my dreams and really amp up the energy about why you're wanting to remember your dreams. So you're really communicating to the subconscious that that's really what you want to do. So once you have that kind of a practice of remembering most of your dreams and writing them down, then there's then it's easier to understand how your dreams speak to you and things like that. Anyone could just go to bed tonight and go, I really want to have a dream like this. And there may be a really strong reaction to it, but in order or response, but in order to sort of give it a good go, I would recommend starting with a dream journaling practice, then moving into exploring the intention. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel like I do that. I kind of set an intention, or if there's like something I kind of want to work on, I'll set the intention to kind of work it through a dream.
Yeah.
Or even like time traveling to like events in my life that I want to kind of work through.
Yeah.
I feel like it really helps bring up like the energy. And I wanted to, since I said time travel, did you ever have any experience? I know like losing time, but like, what about the thought that they're time traveling, like versions of ourselves time traveling? Have you ever had any experiences with that?
I not personal experiences from this perspective. I've had experiences that made me go, one day I'll learn how to do this. You know, that sort of thing. It was like, it's sort of like these weird, it's sort of like they sort of feel like reflections, like a mirror version. There seems to go, why does this feel familiar to me? I realize like, because in the future, for a period of time, actually, I ended up trying to understand why certain people were coming into my life. And I realized like, I think we'll in the future, we'll time travel together or something like that. Now that might be just, we do work together shamanically in that we, just like with out of body experience, you can go all throughout space, right? So too, sometimes people say you can go through time. So it might be just that, but I am getting this sort of whiff that time travel is a little bit more possible than I expected. And that there might be like ripples backwards in time that I'm sort of picking up on. But again, that's sort of speculation, just kind of going like looking at omens at this point.
Yeah. I mean, you could go, I used to think like the Mandela effect was like a crazy people thing kind of.
Yeah.
But I feel like more and more, I feel like I have my own experiences where like, I don't remember it like that. So I don't know if it's, I'm getting old, or there's just more ripples that I'm seeing.
Yep.
You know, but I guess we'll never know until we know, right?
I mean,
I don't know. I've actually had an experience where I feel like I was visited by something that was, I feel like it was my son, time traveled, as crazy as that sounds. But yeah, I feel like I had an interaction with a being or something that was my son, whether it was energetic or whatever. And I actually got verification that it was from spirit.
Yeah.
But I still like think like, yeah, was it really my son from the future? Like, you know?
Yeah. I
mean, in all my experiences, I just still like question that, you know?
Yeah. I'm curious about that. I mean, when my son was in the body, when my wife was pregnant with my son, I had a dream about the birth experience, and that came true. And the dream helped me. We did a like home birth, so I was there, and the cord was sort of wrapped around his neck, and it was like super purple. And I would have just freaked out if this dream hadn't shown up. And the dream was more or less, he was purple, and he recommended I stay calm, and he came to like beautiful color really, really quickly. And so that dream about this future event came really true in a way where it really was helping him out. And I really do believe that something in there time travel.
I lost you. Hello.
Sounded like we got disconnected a little bit. So it might be back.
It's all right. I could edit it and stuff. Yeah, you're good. So again, you had the dream that your son's childbirth.
Yes, yeah. He had the cord around his neck and he came out really, really purple. And the dream helped me remain calm. And it also told me he would be okay. And that was really
amazing.
Yeah.
That's crazy, though. Like, if you wouldn't have had that dream, what, you know, like, you're, you know.
I probably would have dropped him and freaked out, and it probably would have been a lot worse. He might have, I mean, like, it's not like a death situation, I don't think, but it was really significant for me.
Yeah, but, like, you think it's his childbirth, his birth, so it's, like, it's a traumatic, you know, like, they say that we hold that trauma within us.
Yeah.
So it's, like, if this, you know, the first experience of your father and, like, your reaction to him, you know, who knows, like, what that would have affected him energetically, emotionally, spiritually, whatever.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think he also came back when we were conceiving. And he came back like a spirit, like it popped into my aura, basically. And that sort of ear pressure thing happened. And I was like, this is my son. And at that same time, I realized that it was like he pinched my dog and my dog yelped. And so that was sort of wild. I think that's magic of spirit, actually. I don't know if that's not like time travel to me. That's like just spirit being spirit. You were talking about eternity and time and stuff like that. So I think that's magic happening there.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I actually, every single one of my children, I know the night it was conceived. And my son, my oldest, Luke, I had a dream the night he was conceived. Like, oh, actually, awesome. The funny thing is, you know, we were in Lilydale.
Okay.
Me and my wife.
Wow.
We were in Lilydale, stayed in the Lilydale. We were there for it was like an international spiritualist federation, like, meeting.
Yep.
And we were there because my mentor was like the vice president. So we went to like just support him and stuff like that. And I had a dream. His mentor actually came to me in spirit and kept showing me the Vices, Pisces, you know, like the two, is that what it's called? The two circles.
Yeah.
Kind of overlap.
Vesica and, Pisces. Yes.
Yes. Vesica Pisces. Sorry. And then we found out like a couple weeks later that she was pregnant. It was definitely like that. I feel like it was that night, you know?
Yeah.
But is there anything else you want to plug or anything? We're going to wrap it up.
Oh yeah, just the website dseti.org. You can anyone can book a consultation with me, session, get insight or information around that. The Dreamwell app, that's at dreamwellbewell.com, or the app at Play Stores. And my books, I've written 4 books on the subject. That's on Amazon or also dseti.org/books. So thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, and I personally want to recommend your sessions because I felt like I got a lot out of it. I felt like it got to some deeper issues that have been dormant. So check him out, guys. I fully support him.
Thank you.
And yeah, it was a pleasure talking to you. I actually love our conversations. Every time I've talked to you, we always kind of go deep, which isn't for everybody, but that's what I like. So thank you guys. Thanks for supporting. Check us out on Spiritual Graffiti Pod on Instagram. Thanks for supporting. Love you guys. Take care.